right and know to have met our website tomorrow for future students for life. John's going to introduce this call, and then our guest speaker, Matt Bowman.
Hello?
Hi, Kristen?
Hi, are you on?
Okay. I'm going to quickly introduce Matt Bowman for you all. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Matt Bowman serves as legal counsel with the Alliance Defending Freedom at its Washington, D.C. Regional Service Center, where he is a key member of the Life Litigation Project to protect the sanctity of human life. Before joining Alliance Defending Freedom in 2006, Bowman clerked for several federal judges, including the Honorable Samuel Alito. At the U.S. Supreme Court of Appeals of the Third Circuit, he is admitted to the bar in Michigan, the U.S. Supreme Court, the District of Columbia, and numerous other federal courts. Practicing law since 2003, Bowman earned his J.D. from Ave Maria School of Law. Matt, I'm going to turn it over to you now. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, John and Kristen, and welcome to all of you who are on tonight. And obviously our prayers are going out to the folks in the Gulf Coast who are just suffering landfall from this storm. Hopefully it doesn't impact too negatively. I'm here to talk about the freedom of conscience, in particular for medical students, pro-life medical students. And I want to focus on really three areas. First, I want to talk a little bit about some of the philosophical background of this conflict that you might encounter in your medical school. Second, I want to talk about the legal background and what your freedoms actually are. And then third, I want to discuss some practical steps for you to take to protect those freedoms. And finally, we will have an ample amount of time for questions. But the most important thing that I think I can say, if you remember nothing else, is our phone number at Alliance Defending Freedom. It's 1-800-TELL-ADF, T-E-L-L-A-D-F, as in Alliance Defending Freedom. And that's the number to call to have a confidential consultation about any situation that you might be in where you think your conscience protections are at risk. That's a resource that is available to you for free that Alliance Defending Freedom exists to promote. Again, 1-800-TELL-ADF, and that's a tool that you can use to try to know what your freedoms and rights are on your campus. Now, the arguments that you probably typically hear, I know I hear from opponents of conscience rights, is that the idea that patients have a right to demand various services and that patient choice is somehow being suppressed by your protection of conscience. For example, the New England Journal of Medicine in 2009 published an article that went so far as to say that if you have qualms about abortion, sterilization, or birth control, do not practice women's health. That was what their position was. And however, what I see is that we sometimes have a tendency to sort of assume the premise of this argument in the sense that we will respond to the notion that that patients have the right to access items by sort of trying to counterbalance that with the idea that professionals ought to have their own freedoms by virtue of being professionals and human beings in their own right. Now, that's a legitimate point, and it's certainly an important point that we need to make, and I don't want to discourage us from making it, but I think it's similarly important that we emphasize that your freedom of conscience for you as a professional is not only, and maybe from one perspective, is not even primarily a question of protecting yourself. It's really ultimately a question of giving your patients the ability to choose you. Because if you as a pro-life medical professional don't exist, your patients won't be able to choose pro-life medical professionals. And if patient choice is really what our opponents claim to support, they wouldn't be against conscience freedoms, they would be for conscience freedoms. The idea that by which they oppose conscience freedoms actually deprives patients of choices. It deprives patients of the choice of you and of the, all the good service that you plan to render to them in line with their own values, which they share with you. Without conscience protections, women who want to give birth to through a pro-life professional will be forced to give birth through abortionists, because everyone will be abortionist who graduates from medical school without conscience protections. Senior citizens who want to receive care from people who are not who they can trust not to also want to end their life won't be able to choose pro-life doctors. They won't be able to choose doctors who don't also kill patients. And families who want doctors who offer fertility care that respects natural procreation won't be able to choose that without freedom of conscience to be a doctor that practices Hippocratic medicine. And so I think that the philosophical principle I want to leave you with is that when you encounter the argument about conscience protection on your campus and how you really need to think about what the patient wants and patient access, that argument really, if someone is taking it seriously, it ought to turn right back against that person to illustrate to them that if they really care about patient choice, they're going to protect your conscience so that patients can choose someone like you when you graduate and go into practice. Now, in addition to these, this ethical, philosophical principle, I want to talk a little bit about the law. And the good news here is that there actually are an ample amount of laws, not universal, not as broad as we would want them to be, but a substantial a quorum of laws around the country, a sort of a hodgepodge of laws that do offer some real level of freedom of conscience for pro-life medical students. And but the difficulty with knowing how these laws apply in your situation is that they're very situationally applicable. So they might depend on what kind of school you go to, whether it's a public or private school, what state you live in, what specifically you're objecting to doing. What's the context, the relationship that you have professionally with the person who wants to require you to do it? What's the nature of their requirement? And to know whether and how all of those apply, to have an informed view of what your own situation is, again, you really ought to seek free legal advice. And I'll just repeat our phone number, 1-800-TELL-ADF, T-E-L-L-A-D-F. It's totally free. It's totally confidential. I've had students say, "Well, I'm not sure about calling because I don't want the school to find out, or I'm nervous about that." The school can't find out, and we're certainly not going to tell anyone. When you call and talk to an attorney, we're bound by our own ethical rules in the legal profession, not to disclose to anyone that you even called or that we even know who you are. I've had situations where I've encountered people personally who are acquaintances of those who've called me, and I've had to not disclose that, yes, I spoke with your friend, because just the fact that I spoke with them is part of attorney-client confidentiality. So it's getting free legal input about your situation is really a way of giving you the kind of informed consent that you need when you're in a difficult situation or you're expecting there to be one, and you need to know what you're going to do. In order to make an informed decision about that, you need to have all the data in front of you, and part of that data is what is the legal situation that applies to you. So in relation to that legal situation, let me just outline a couple of levels of law, not to necessarily give you a legal course here or education on this issue, but just to give you a general outline. We have, in protection of your rights, we have laws at the federal level, we have laws at the state level, and we have, among those, there are some that are specific to certain kinds of things like abortion, and then there are some that apply more generally to religion and religious objections, and some that apply to moral objections that aren't necessarily religious. Now, on the federal level, there are several laws that were passed in the 1970s when Roe v. Wade was enacted. One is often called the Church Amendment, named after a senator, Frank Church. Another one, the Coates-Snow Amendment, passed in the 1990s. What these laws essentially do is they say that for certain schools that receive federal funding, they, as a condition of the funding, they can't discriminate against pro-lifers, including medical students. And I'll just throw it out here in case you're taking notes, but you can always get this later. 42 United States Code, Section 300, the letter A, a hyphen, and then the number 7, 300A7, is one of these. And another one is the same beginning, 42 United States Code, Section, and then 238, and then the letter N. These two provisions, the first one, 300A7, actually could protect you even if you're at a private non-governmental medical school, if it's getting money from NIH. Now, really, most medical schools are getting money from NIH because there's a lot of money and they're giving it out everywhere. Not everybody is, but a lot of them are. And when they get that money, there are some protections in this law that basically say no entity which receives such and such money can deny admission or otherwise discriminate against any applicant for training because of the applicant's reluctance, et cetera, to participate in abortions or sterilizations. Now, the other law, 238N, this one applies specifically to medical schools that are run by the government. So not private medical schools, but ones run by the government or a state school, if you will, state affiliated schools. And this says basically if they're getting federal money, they can't discriminate against someone who refuses to train in abortions, to refer for them, or to they also can't discriminate against pro-life medical schools. And you can refuse to make arrangements for any of the anything related to abortion. So it's very broad. It's broad in that sense, but another sense you might note is that particular law only applies to abortion. So I get a lot of calls sometimes about, well, I don't want to provide a contraception or certain kinds of birth control, and sometimes it's because those items are abortifacient, and sometimes it isn't. And oftentimes we'll have to check because some of these laws apply to abortion specifically, while other ones apply to any procedure to which you might object. So we need to look. Now, we also have state laws, and there are state versions of these laws that are sort of mirrored in the state code, 51 different state codes in the District of Columbia around the country. Most states, not all, have these laws. Most of them are fairly broad. Most of them only apply to abortion, but some of them apply more broadly. And some of them are very, very strong. And so there are laws out there. There can be a question of even if the law exists in your particular situation, is there what's your way to enforce it? And that's, again, a specific situation-by-situation analysis that we need to look at. Finally, I want to just mention that, again, what are the practical steps for you to take in a situation where your conscience might be at risk? Well, one of the things that I think you do at first is you try to anticipate the problem in advance. It's helpful to think as far ahead as you can about when these conflicts might arise, so you can get some input and some idea about what's your status. What would your legal status be if the school's telling me, I have to work at Planned Parenthood? Is that or is that not consistent with state law? Depends on is it or is it not consistent with the federal law? And you can get that in advance as far as you can, so that you'll be in a little bit more situation where you've got a little bit of breathing room to figure out what you want to do. Now, what you want to do doesn't necessarily mean take legal action. It might mean just talking to your supervisor. It might mean legal action. It might mean writing a letter. I mean, what you want to do is a situation that you can only really decide after you've gotten a perspective on what your rights are. And then once you have advance notice, give us a call. And we affiliate ourselves with attorneys who similarly work confidentially and for free in your state, and we can bring them alongside us to help with input on a question. And then you decide what to do. And ultimately, the decision of what to do is entirely yours, because you're the person in the situation. I will say that we have been successful in several instances in enforcing the federal church amendment. In particular, we brought a complaint against Vanderbilt University, which was forcing nursing student applicants, not medical school, but nursing student applicants, to promise that they will assist abortion as a condition for applying. And after we filed the complaint, they backed down 24 hours later. Last December, I also obtained a settlement in court in New Jersey against the University of Medicine and Dentistry in New Jersey, which was trying to force nurses that work there to participate in abortions or essentially be fired. And the hospital basically backed down at the last minute before they went before the judge. So there are ways that we can help. But again, it doesn't always mean that you go to court. The initial question is what to give you the information you need to make an informed decision in your situation. And I see I've already exceeded my 15 minutes, so let's go ahead to questions.
Great. Matt, I'm going to ask you some questions here that were sent ahead of time. And if you could touch on them, that would be great. And for those of you that are listening and you want to submit questions for Matt, please feel free to go ahead and submit those online. There's a little box there that you can type those in and send them, and we'll try to get to them. If we're not able to, we'll figure out a way to get some answers back to you. So anyway, we'll start here with Kara. Kara says, do you know anyone with a list of OB-GYN residencies friendly to pro-life med students?
I'm actually going to kick that question back to John, because I personally don't keep track of that, but I've heard that others do, and I don't know if there's a formal list. I know that there might be some reluctance to publish a list very widely because of maybe some backlash that those people might get. But I think that there might be an informal list, and I've known medical students who've gotten placements through word of mouth. So, John, do you have that a list like that?
Well, I would definitely say to get a hold of APLOG, which is the pro-life OBGYN organization that's out there. And, Kara, I can send you the link to their website if you don't have it. They would be a great resource for you. And Med Students for Life is also in the process of developing those kind of guides to be able to help our medical students find placements with pro-life doctors in the area. So I'm going to go on to the next question here, Matt. Mr. Bowman, this comes from Maria. I recently graduated this month as a family nurse practitioner and I'm looking for employment in a family practice setting. I do not intend to prescribe birth control because it's against my beliefs. Do you have any advice on how to approach this topic with potential employers?
Well, thanks, Maria. The question is one that's a little bit hard to answer in the abstract, but in general I would say, well, first tell me sort of what state are you applying to, where you're applying to work, what state is it, and then we would look at what that state law says about what protection you might have not to prescribe birth control and not to be discriminated against on the basis of you not prescribing birth control. And then once you knew what your legal status was, maybe there's a law that says they can't discriminate against you. Okay, well then it'll depend on the application process and what the nature of the job is. You said that you'd want to practice in a family practice setting, but you I would at that point also try to seek advice from some other pro-life professionals who maybe have gone through this and can give you some advice so that not only are you considering the legal parameters of what you're doing, but also the interpersonal ones. So there'll be a balance between fully disclosing what your position is, and on the other hand, not necessarily wearing it on your sleeve in an inappropriate way, and somewhere in that balance, the knowledge about what your legal rights are will help you to decide exactly how to do it, and will help you in consultation with a pro-life person who maybe has done this before about how they were able to manage.
Great. Thanks, Matt. The next question comes from Nancy in New York. That is, what are my rights as medical student regarding contraception and vaccinations that go against my conscience? I've read that the Obama administration has rescinded Bush's conscience clause so that health professionals are obliged to provide contraception, and the only exemptions made are for abortion and sterilization procedures. Is that true? And before you move on to that, real quick, I wanted to just let everyone know, if you go to med.studentsforlife.org, you'll see the blog posting about this conference call, and click on that blog post, and that will give you the box in order to ask questions. So anyway, go ahead, Matt.
Okay. Well, let me answer your second question first, Nancy. There was a rescission of something that the president did. What happened was these laws that I mentioned to you that were passed in the 70s, President Bush passed a rule, not a law, but a rule passed by bureaucrats that basically said, hey, we're going to enforce these laws that have been passed in the 70s because we don't think they're being enforced enough. And President Obama basically rescinded that. But President Obama did not rescind the laws underneath the rule. So he doesn't have power to do that yet. So those laws still exist. And one of them says that in some circumstances, not all, you can't be required to assist not only in abortion or sterilization, but in any procedure that violates your religious or moral convictions. However, whether that law applies to you is going to depend on a variety of things. It's going to depend on what school you go to. It's going to depend on whether it's a government school or a private school, whether that school's receiving federal funds that subject this law to it. It'll depend on what state you're in and whether that state has a law that would protect you from objecting to either participating in contraception or in certain vaccinations. There are a lot of circumstances. It is true that a lot of laws, not because of President Obama, but because of just the way these laws were developed. And a lot of laws talk about abortion, but not contraception, and when they protect people's consciences. So this can be a difficulty. If I were to make a general statement, I would say, yes, the objection to participate in contraception or vaccinations that maybe are derived from aborted fetal cells, those objections have, in general, less protection than objections to participating in abortion. But having said that, you can't extrapolate from that to anyone's particular circumstance, because it all depends on what state you're in and what school you're going to, and does the school get money from different sources, subjecting it to laws that do protect from in your, and what is it that you're objecting to, assisting, and what's your context, and are you who's the discriminator, and how are they proposing to discriminate, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a way of saying you really need to talk through the specifics with with someone who can walk you through some of these legal parameters.
Great. Thanks, Matt. I did get a response here from Anne Marie and Edwards in regards to Kara's question about OBGYN. She said, try OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria, Illinois. So I can also forward that to you later, Kara, since I have your email address here. Here is a question from, looks like Cordelia in Des Moines. She asks, I'm a medical student taking pharmacology. Do you have advice on how to politely yet very specifically request that my professors honestly address which drugs are abortifacient and which prevent fertilization?
Oh, sure. If I understand the question doesn't pertain so much to the whether the student is being required to do something against her conscience, but whether the teachers are doing their job appropriately. And, you know, that is that's less of a legal question than a prudential question about how to address that and how it might reflect on your grade. And I think always the approach ought to be, you know, you ought to be true to yourself and not fearful, excessively fearful. You ought also to be prudent. But if this is a real concern of yours, you ought to think about a way to mention it. And in medical school, it seems to me the best approach is always the scientific approach. So to find the raw data and let the data speak for itself, it seems to be the best approach. But I would really defer this question to folks who have been through medical school and maybe encountered situations like this. And there are plenty of those available, not only through Meds Students for Life, but through groups like APLOG and others.
Great. Thanks, Matt. The next question comes from Maureen in South Bend, Indiana. She asks, does the law protect students' conscience rights on written exams? If there were a test question in a medical school where the instructor's correct response included advising a woman to have an abortion or use birth control to prevent future pregnancies, must there be an alternative response I could give that would give me full credit to on the question, or do I have to pretend to be pro-choice in order to get full credit?
That's an excellent question, and it seems to me that if you're in a situation where one of these laws applies to you because you're at a school that gets certain federal funding that has to comply with one of these laws, or is a state school and has to comply, or is in a state where there's a state law, et cetera, et cetera. It seems to me that if there is a law that says your particular school can't discriminate against you as a medical student because you're pro-life, then and the law protects your beliefs and not just your kind of actions. It seems to me that it is discrimination to mark someone's grade down because they object to giving an answer that's pro-abortion. Now that how to test that and to actually try to get that law enforced could be tricky because it there might be questions about whether what was the grade marked down for that reason or for another reason, or are you even allowed to see which questions you got right and which questions you got wrong, and when can you find out, and how do you? I mean, there are some tests, standardized tests, is my understanding, that you're even not allowed to kind of claim to remember what the question was. So there are a variety of, but it seems to me the bottom line answer to your question is, yes, the law ought to protect against discrimination on the basis of those sorts of questions, and I would be very interested in hearing from people about situations that they've been in that they expect they might be in soon, or they've been in very recently, not necessarily something that happened to you 5 years ago, where we might be able to specify how we could actually try to protect people against those kinds of discrimination.
Great, thank you. Here is a question that keeps coming to mind. It seems like you're talking about how each state has maybe different conscience protections. How would how would these medical students be able to find out what their state has to say on conscience rights? Is there a place that they can go online? How would they become, to be able to get more education on this particular issue?
Well, at the risk of sounding flippant, the way they find out is they call 1-800-TELL-ADF, TELL-ADF. Now, I'm a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. So if I wanted to find out something about medicine, certainly I would probably Google it. But I wouldn't pretend that I'm actually now fully and competently informed on the medical aspects of that condition. Law isn't medicine, but it seems to me that there are websites that that describe and sketch out some conscience laws, and you're relying on the person who put that out there. But to really know whether the law in your state exists and applies to you, and the terms that are used in that law, what they mean, and whether they apply to what you want, you really have to consult a legal expert. And so, there are websites where you can sort of search for that, but I don't think that it's any wiser to rely. It's sort of stake your conscience and your career on sort of what you read on a website about what your rights are, than it would be for me to kind of do my own assessment of whether I have cancer based on what I read on a website. So I really would encourage people to call 1-800-TELL-ADF. Certainly do internet research. I'm not discouraging you from doing that, but I don't want to encourage you to rely on that.
Great, thank you. And we're now at the 9:30 mark, and we're going to close it down as promised. I do want to encourage you medical students, if you do have further questions, feel free to email me at jrussell@studentsforlife.org, and I would be happy to direct the questions to Matt, or if there are questions that we can answer, we'd be happy to do so. But thank you all for listening tonight, and I hope you were able to learn some things that you can carry with you into your busy med school year. Thank you so much, Matt, again, for being here.
All right. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Good night.